Welcome back to Whispers of Oxenfurt and the first episode since we finished all the books and novels. To go over again, I will not be going over Season of Storms unless a guest chooses some of the stories to go over. Leading into that, from now on, each episode will feature a guest in their choosing of a short story or anything Witcher-related. If you are new to the podcast, I've recently completed all the short stories and novels. They are right there in the back catalog. I aim to provide a historical and at times philosophical angle to the themes and background of the books, using real-world information that is privy to my degree in history. They're also very short and easily digestible. Other announcements. I have another podcast releasing soon called Whispers of Hogwarts, and will be co-hosting it with my fiancé, Lindsay, who has read them a ton and will serve as the expert. Those that have watched my stream will be familiar with her, and this podcast will entail my first reading of those stories and will cover the books and movies in a way similar to this show. I will put out an announcement soon once it gets on all podcatchers, and I hope you join us in that adventure. Also, be on the lookout in the coming months for an announcement about a Witcher-themed Dungeons & Dragons campaign that will be on another platform, not here, but will be written and DM'd by yours truly. I will link below an audio play that I wrote early last year and had others in the community help act out, and hopefully it gives you a little taste of what is to come. On to the main course. Today's guest, Tracy, is a fantastic member of the community, and make sure to check the notes to see where you can find her. Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch, where among playing Dungeons & Dragons and variety streaming, she has from time to time done cooking streams. Okay. Maybe it was a one-time Christmas cookie thing, but if you follow my Twitter, you know that I post as many cooking and baking pics as anything else. And my mind is wandering back on task. We discuss the edge of the world, covering topics such as the plight of the elves, the tone of the story, the idea of having literal gods and goddesses, and you know we went over the Netflix adaptation. At the end, you get a little bonus coverage as we discussed A Shard of Ice, because I simply cannot not talk about that story. Enjoy. And today we have Tracy, a.k.a. Miss Magitech. Welcome. How are you doing today?
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Anytime I can get somebody else on to talk instead of me, I'm going to take it.
Yes, I enjoy talking a lot about The Witcher, so this is... this is perfect. I am very, very happy to talk for hours upon hours. So,
yeah, and this was, I'll admit, when you pick this story, yes. I, for some reason in my head, got it with The Bounds of Reason. And I started, because when I hear Edge of the World, I always instantly think of that with a villain Trentmerth and whatnot. So I started researching, looking into that, and I was like, hold up, that doesn't sound right. Oh, and I went and looked at your message. I was like, damn it. This is the edge of the world.
We can get into that a little bit later on why I picked this particular short story, because I feel like it's one of the, I don't know, when people talk about their favorite short story, I don't think many people pick this one. So I have my reasons, and we could talk about that later. But yeah, I'm not surprised that you might have thought that it was another one, because this one is one of the less popular, I feel.
Yeah, it seems that way. It's definitely... mm-hmm. Very popular to discuss in relation to the Netflix adaptation.
Yes, yes.
So yeah, we will definitely get into anything, everything. So let's start right now. So the first thing that you wanted to discuss, what is that?
I guess a few things. I find this story very interesting. Like I said, I feel like it's kind of an interesting one in that it starts out kind of like you're not sure where it's really going to go. It starts out with Geralt and Dandelion, or Yaskier. I'm so used to calling him Yaskier now because of the show.
Yeah.
But when I go back to read the books, I realize I'm like, oh, yeah, right. Dandelion is his name in the books. So I might kind of flip flop between calling them both. But it starts out in a way like kind of more fun and even comedic in many ways, especially with the banter between Geralt and Dandelion, and when they first encounter the Sylvan Torque, It starts out very comedic in a way, but then it kind of takes more of a sad turn once they get captured, and that's where I think the story really turns and gets good. So that's really the first thing I kind of wanted to talk about, was just the fact that it does kind of have like two sides to it.
And this is where we're introduced to Yaskier Dandelion.
Yes.
And a big thing in the books is they already know each other.
Right.
Yeah, they're already friends and they already have a history. And in the adaptation, they pretty much just met there. And I get why they did it, but I kind of like in the short story where we don't need the origin story of their friendship. They can just be friends, and through exposition, they can kind of just discuss, oh, remember this time to do that. And I do like that it actually gave Geralt a real world, in his world, friend that to play off of. And it definitely was very jokey at the beginning.
Yep.
And Dandelion very much was a comic relief sidekick, if you will.
Yep, I agree that we don't need like a full blown like origin of their meeting, but this particular story does really give you a lot of insight for the dynamic between the two, where it really is that true troubadour bard type character, where he will talk about his poetry, he'll make jokes, he'll try to make light of things, and Geralt isn't really having it, but he still keeps him around, which is, you know, says a lot about Geralt as well. He doesn't just completely tell him to get like to try to kill him or tell him to leave or anything like that.
Yeah, that was, I don't remember which episode or wherever it was, but I kind of wrote that down also, where it's like, what does Dandelion bring to the table? And Geralt just seems so annoyed by him and is always kind of saving him. But again, unlike the series, Geralt never really says, hey, fuck off, Bard, and like go away.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was generally just because there was always going to need somebody that was his, like his friend, and not like the sorceress relationship, which, whew, you know, they really get into that. Sapkowski really loved to give Geralt the love interest, but I guess to always give him this old type of friend to maybe ground him.
Yes. I really do think that's it. And I don't think Geralt will ever admit it really, but I think that he kind of enjoys that company. Despite him never wanting to actually say that he enjoys it, he enjoys it. That's how I feel when I read it.
There's a quote that was said, and I had this written down here. It's people, mm-hmm. Geralt turned his head, like to invent monsters and monstrosities. Then they seem less monstrous themselves when they get blind, drunk, cheat, steal, beat their wives, starve an old woman. And he lists like all of these things in here.
Right.
They like to think that the Bane entering cottages at daybreak is more monstrous than they are. They feel better then. They find it easier to live. And this is where, when he talked about, it's very lighthearted, very jokey. And then he throws this line in. It's like, oh yeah, we're back in this gray world of The Witcher.
Yep. It's pretty deep, actually, Geralt really getting into that. And I think that quote is one of the more famous quotes from the story, I think, or one of just the ones that you can really look back to, and it reminds you that this is what the world of The Witcher is all about. It's that famous quote, like, the monsters are the ones that we create. But it's true. And in this, you know, Geralt really touches on that, where it's, you know, the monsters aren't always the creatures that he encounters, but it could be the people who are doing horrible things. And they, you know, we're talking about all of these crazy monsters that they've seen when Geralt is looking for work in the beginning of the story. But, you know, he then brings up this line to Dandelion, saying it's, you know, it's really the people who are trying to make themselves feel better by talking about all of these monsters. And it's a really good quote, and definitely paints a picture of the world that we're in.
It's one of those, as you read this book or the books and you don't know too much about it and you haven't heard much about it, it kind of smashes you over the head right here. It's not too subtle of saying, like, you're going to eventually realize, yes, he is a monster hunter, but yes, the real monsters are humans. And it can be very, like, I'm 14 and very deep. You know, people are just like, man, it's really about the humans are the real monsters, man. But it hits it very well. And especially in this story, as you're going to realize that, yeah, maybe the enemy or I should say the antagonists in here, the elves, you know, maybe they're not the bad guys, and at times there aren't really bad guys.
Yep, 100%. That's one of my favorite things about the Witcher universe, and just more of like this dark fantasy in general, like this whole genre, is that it really, again, yeah, it's not like Lord of the Rings or some high fantasy where it's very clear who's, you know, the good and evil. This is really, there's that gray area, and you see that in this story more than many of the other stories, that there is certainly, you can see sides of who would be portrayed as the bad guy and why they're doing what they do, and it's maybe they're not as bad as we thought they were. So yeah, I really like that about this story in particular.
And so another thing you brought up to segue right into that is mm-hmm. the elves versus humans versus witchers and the plight of Philivandrel and these elves. So how did that really, or why did that resonate with you so much?
Yeah, so this is, again, where it really takes a turn and becomes one of my favorite stories in the entire first two books, is when Geralt and Dandelion do get captured, and they're, you know, they're talking with the elves, and first they meet Teruvial, and she is just the epitome of like the aggressive, angry elf, who just does not want to even try to have any conversation with them. But meanwhile, Philivandrel shows up, and he starts, you know, Geralt and him go back and forth about why they're doing what they're doing. And it's just some of the most interesting dialogue to me between, you know, an elf and a witcher. And in some ways, you know, they could be considered the same. And I think Geralt tries to relate to Philivandrel in some ways, but he isn't having it, because Geralt, in Philivandrel's eyes, Geralt has assimilated among humans, and he's almost compromising in a way where Philivandrel sees it as, I will not assimilate with these people at all. Like, they are mean and horrible to us, and they've done horrible things. I do not want to associate with them at all. And it is definitely a pride thing in that aspect.
And that really, yeah, that reminds you of, was it Philivendrel's Gwent line of, pride is all we've left?
Yes.
It's like, well, yeah, they hit that there.
I was going to say, like, all of his dialogue in Gwent is like perfect for his character. Even though, you know, we don't see much of him in the books besides this, but it's perfect.
Unlike Milva, they did him right.
Yeah.
We'll get into that.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I've already ranted about that enough, about how they did Milva. They did Milva so dirty.
I know. I totally agree. She is one of the coolest characters in the books, and she gets nothing in Gwent.
Her card, it's really her artwork.
Her artwork.
And it's such a spoiler.
It is a spoiler, which is also shocking that they would have that.
Yeah, like, what? Okay, whatever. We
tangent.
Yeah, we'll get back on track. I just, anytime I think about Milva in that. Okay.
Yeah.
So with hitting on the elves in their plight, and so what happens here is, you know, they're hired to this. It's the Sylvan, Torque, or Torca. Mm-hmm. I think I just call him Torque. Mm-hmm. He's basically, you know, hired by these elves to steal from the humans and give it to them. And Geralt's like, well, no, a job's a job. I have to go do that. And then the elves explain, like, we are starving. We've been mm-hmm. kicked out of our home. This is all we have to do. And then Geralt's like, no, do what I do. You have to assimilate. You have to, you know, get in with them. And it's very easy for Geralt to say that, as while he is not human, and he'll get upset to call him human, he looks like a human. And I guess as long as people don't look too strongly into his eyes, he for the most part kind of is human. And mm-hmm. the way Teruvial and Philivandrel and all of them are like, it's not up to us. We can try to do it, but they will never accept us. But I also think from this, it doesn't showcase, obviously, that maybe they are right. Like, it's still up to debate of, you can still be like, well, the elves can do more. And it doesn't make it, again, black and white. It's still very gray when to come away from this thinking like, man, this is just kind of messed up, and not to both sides it, like that's just lazy in general in all cases, but it's just very complicated, and humans and elves are dealing with, you know, the sins of the father, the hundreds of years of, you know, the racism and the fighting, and it's just not easy. Like Geralt says, oh, just assimilate. You can't just do it, snap your fingers, and everything be solved.
Yeah, I think there's one thing. There's a line that Geralt says to Filivandril that's like, you're, you know, living in arrogant isolation. And that the way he said it, I think that really stuck with me. I think that's like the perfect way to describe Filivandril, is like this arrogant isolation that he's kind of living in. And it's very interesting that they really have this sense of not wanting to back down on how they feel about how they've been treated. And I think even at some point, Dandelion, I think it might have been him that said it, that when Filivandril was getting ready to kill Geralt and Dandelion, he says like, oh, we're paying for the sins of all of the humans or whatever. And Filivandril actually says, no, we're just doing this out of necessity. Like, we're just killing you because if you go back, we know you're going to tell all the villagers and we're going to starve. So we're doing this out of necessity. But I think maybe deep down, he might have also just been very upset and angry and wanted to just take them out. But it's the whole exchange is just really, really interesting. And it's true, like you said, you do kind of leave thinking about both sides. And it's really, again, yeah, you can think about it either way. It's up to the reader to decide, maybe, oh, I don't, are the elves, I do you feel for the elves, or are they taking it too far? It does leave a lot of questions to be asked.
And it never, like, Filivandril never appears again.
Yeah.
And the stuff with the elves, it does come back. It comes back more with the Scoia'tael.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you think, or what do you think about the decision of the different endings compared to the short story and the show? Because in the short story, Lil, the Queen of the Fields, you know, Dana Mbate, or I never really knew how to pronounce that, is in the short story, plays the pivotal role in the short story. She's removed from the series, and Filivandril just lets Geralt go, and they're kind of, would you say they're on like good terms?
Yeah, you know, that is an interesting thing that the show did versus the story, and I'm not sure really how I fully feel about it. I think so. Dana Mead, however you say it. It's really hard. Just yeah. Dana, I'll call her. Yeah. When she shows up, it is kind of like, it is a little like out there, I think. It's just like, oh, suddenly this goddess shows up. I personally like it because I like the world building aspect of it. And I think it kind of introduces a new thing to the world of The Witcher, and I'm like, oh, I'm always so fascinated by like lore and world building. So to me, I was like, oh, cool, we get to be introduced to this cool goddess. But I think for a show, it might be a little much for them to just introduce this goddess suddenly, and you know, viewers might just be confused because it might not really fit in the story. So I'm okay with the way the show kind of removed that whole thing. But it does kind of now change the story a little bit, where it seems like Filivandril actually did compromise, or not compromise, but he heeded Geralt's words and just like let him go. So it does kind of think like, oh, well, and I know that we're going to be seeing more of him in season two. So it might be interesting to see how that light tweak to the story kind of changes the show Filivandril in comparison to what maybe the book was kind of portraying him as.
Yeah, he has been confirmed cast in the second, I believe he's been confirmed cast.
Yeah.
In the second season. I think they'll do more with them, because I know that was one thing my fiance stated, because she knows, you know, nothing of it when we watched it, and was just like, oh yeah, that never came back. Like, the elves never came back. And I was like, yeah, this was them introducing the elves and, like, their plight, but it never was brought up back in the first season.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, I mean, who knows what they're going to do? Because, again, I do think with all adaptations, it's going to be more along the lines early on, and then it's just going to split. And once you start splitting, it just cracks more and more and more. And so hopefully they'll do more with them, I think.
Yeah. I hope so too. Like I said, one of my favorite things, just when I get into when I get into something, like whether it be any sort of RPG, like a game I'm playing or books that I'm reading, I really do get myself immersed in the lore and learning more about other creatures and people in this world, like the elves. I really think that I want to see more of it. And I'm hoping we see more of it in the show, because it really would help, like, expand on this, like, diverse universe that The Witcher is, besides just, like, monsters and humans. So I don't know. I'm really hoping that we see more of that. We don't even get, like, that much of it in the books. Like, we do see more of the elves later on in the series, but they're just kind of always more of a side thing. So I don't know. I really like them personally. I think that I would love to see more of it. And I also know that the whole, like, elves versus humans things is not a new concept. We see it a lot in, like, I've actually just started playing Dragon Age, the game, and it's very similar, where the elves and the humans hate each other, and it's just something that's very common in a lot of fantasy. But I just like the way Sapkowski introduced it, and this story does a good job introducing it.
Yeah, it's elves, dwarves, humans, you know, halflings. Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's this very traditional fantasy, but you're right. It's what they do with it, and it's how they change it. And it's where, like you said, with Lord of the Rings, the elves are the eternal, very traditional. And again, it's very traditional because Lord of the Rings helped kind of embed that in.
Tolkien, like, made it, yeah.
Yeah, and made it popular.
Yeah.
In that modern. And so here it's very much the elves are the bottom. Like, if they're just trying to survive. Like, here they're literally, if you choose to believe them, starving, having to pay this Sylvan to steal food for them. And so he kind of really flipped it on that end. But so with the book ending, it was like, it was a deus ex machina. Like, God appears, or goddess appears, and literally just like that, they're saved and everything's fine. But Philivandrel basically, you know, reluctantly frees Geralt and then says, hey, we'll meet again in battle. And hey, Witcher, I hope you don't let me down. And Geralt's like, I'll try. And that is such a, you know, like a Chekhov's line. It's not a gun. It's not actually that's there. But I remember, like, reading that and being like, oh, okay, he's going to come back. We're going to get something out of it, but it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It is kind of like it leaves you to think, what does that mean? And it's kind of an open thing. We're not really sure what exactly that means. I guess later on, when things, like, heat up with, like, Francesca Findebear, which I think Philivandrel is, like, works for her later on, once the elves are starting to get more prominent. But it never really, it doesn't really come to full fruition, that line.
Yeah, I'm not, I've done this podcast over the course of 2.5 years, so I can't remember everything. Yeah. But is he mentioned again? Do you know that?
I also can't remember if he's actually mentioned again, like, later on with Francesca. That's actually good. Now, I'm going to look into that later, because I forget myself.
It's one of those I genuinely wonder, because I'm of this opinion that, and maybe he stated this somewhere and people are just like, nope, here you go. Here's a link that refutes it. That he made these short stories, and they were very much short stories, and he was not a full-time writer, because he was selling to, like, a magazine or, like, this collection, right?
Yeah.
I believe so. And then I think he had this and was like,
it was.
Yeah. And then it was just, okay, I've got these short swords. I got this Witcher. And then it took off. And then he got the ideas of Ciri in this grand epic. And so much of this early stuff, he was like, no, I don't want to do that anymore. And he created, you know, the novels. Because I, going back and rereading these short stories, and again, I know characters develop, and that's like the purpose of character development. But it's so different. And I know short stories are different than novels, but it's almost a different writer. And I know you get better with time and all of that, but it's so different. And I just think that he basically said bollocks to a lot of these early ideas and just ran, you know, with this epic. And something like this, I don't know, maybe he thought about in those later books and was like, you know what, I don't even care enough to even bring them back. This is the story. That stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. That I sometimes forget. I think a lot of people forget that you bring up. It's true. Like, Sapkowski wrote these, and he really, like, he isn't a Tolkien who J.R.R. Tolkien will create an entire, like, universe and put players in it. Like, he'll write, you know, the dialogue, create an entire language for the elves, and we'll have maps and things. I don't think, you know, Sapkowski was ever like that, like a world builder, but he just liked telling stories. And then, you know, once this did really pick up and he wrote the full saga, you're right. He probably didn't think about touching on some of these things that were brought up in the older short stories. And that's okay. It's just, you know, for like, looking back, it does make you think, like, what could have happened, or what was he thinking at that time?
Okay, so we talked about the literal goddess coming into the fold here. And to me, I used to be very religious, and I'm not anymore. But even now, I think about the impact of seeing a god or goddess in the universe. And she is that. Like, she is telepathically communicating, which, again, through magic can be done of others. And she's levitating, and these animals, you know, were kind of all around her. And I'm like, maybe if there's magic in a universe, it lessens the idea of your religion and your goddesses. But I would think for someone like Geralt, who generally at this time is like, nah, that shit ain't real. Magic is there. People just make this stuff up. To actually see that, that would really impact me. But I guess it didn't to Geralt. Would that impact you if you saw something like that?
I think it would, actually. And it's true that, like, when somebody who's experienced a lot of magic, maybe it's not the same impact. But I just think that, I like to think that because she is a goddess, that it was a lot more divine. And the fact that, you know, her eyes were, like, piercing blue, and everything about her was different. And I think Geralt even noticed that in earlier on, before she, like, transformed. That there was something about her that was different. And so I think that Geralt seeing this and experiencing this, I do think it would have changed him. And seeing the way the elves reacted to it, where they basically were worshiping her, it probably, you know, had a sense of significance for him, and especially for the elves. Like, they, and them too. I know, like, in times of trouble, a lot of people do look to higher power. And so the elves, who have been struggling and are starving and are pushed out into the mountains, and, you know, their home was taken from them, seeing this divine intervention is probably, like, really impactful to them, because they have had nothing, and having a god come in and intervene is probably really significant to them as well.
I wonder if, or what the impact would be, because obviously she is hiding as this, like, very skinny peasant girl with the humans. And I kind of wonder, what if you showed those humans, you know, what you could do and what you were? Would the humans gain respect for her? Or would it be just probably, oh, she's a witch and fight? I don't know. I would think that might help them accept you to show you.
Yeah, right? I know. Because I think they thought she was kind of weird and quiet and didn't understand her. But it is, I don't know, God's always, like, work in mysterious ways, I guess. So, like, maybe she didn't want to show her power to the humans, but she was really, and I also, like, think about it, I'm like, maybe she really was looking out for the elves. Like, she helped the people give their food and things to the Torque or Sylvan. And then, you know, in turn, the elves got food and they were taken care of a little bit. So it's like maybe it was all part of her plan or something. I was always like, when I first read this, I was trying to interpret it, like what it all meant. And that's kind of what I got from it. But it is kind of interesting to think about, you know, how she works as a goddess and what her plan is.
Yeah, I don't know. That stuff has always just fascinated me whenever somebody introduces, because the same thing, once you introduce magic to a story, you open up, you can call it Pandora's box, a can of worms, anything. And then here it's okay, you've got your magic and now you have a literal deity who's operating like this, which another thing too is, if she was operating as Lil in that town, is she going to go back there? Because she says they're leaving. But then I'm like, well, how long was she Lil? And why was she Lil? Why was she in the town?
Yeah, that's another question. It's like so many questions. Like, is she going to go back, or did she fulfill her purpose to help the elves and, you know, maybe soften them and not like have them kill Geralt or whatever? Like, I don't know if like she fulfilled her purpose and then she's going to move on to the next thing, or if she's going to return to that small upper Posada village and just, you know, live on as a small girl. It is kind of interesting to think about and leaves a lot of questions.
So what did you think of like the episode of this from the Netflix series? What did you think about, like, did it work for you?
It was an interesting one. It definitely wasn't one of my favorite episodes. I liked some aspects of it for this story. I don't know. I think that I did like the introduction of Toruvial and Filivandril. It was very short, and basically everything in this was very abridged, which is understandable because you can only put so much in one episode of a show. Like, you can't flesh out every aspect and every detail of the short story. So it did kind of start out like Geralt met Yaskir and, you know, they went out together to try to find the Sylvan, the devil, as they called it. So I was like, okay, you know, they're following the story a little bit, at least here. I was okay with that. Once, you know, the Sylvan, or they met with Torque, he did kind of have that quirky comedic personality. They had an exchange that was meant to be funny. I guess it was. I didn't really find it that funny, but it was meant to be funny. And then, you know, then they get captured by the elves and they break Yaskir's loot and everything. So there were like little things that were homages to the story that I personally was happy with. And, you know, the elves talking about their plight and all of that, it really reminded me of the short story, and I was very happy. I was like, yes, this is great. But honestly, that was about it. That was about all I really liked in the episode. I don't know. What were your thoughts on it?
I don't know if the series as a whole, I've really cooled on it the longer it goes on. Yeah. And I was one, and again, people are probably tired of me saying this, but it does play into how I experienced the show due to the Winds Howling podcast, one of the other four damn podcasts I'm a part of, three other Witcher ones. We got to see the first like four episodes or something like 3 weeks before everybody. And so I'm watching these and experiencing them before everybody else. So that heightens everything, because you went to the actual like premiere, right?
Yes, I did. The first episode premiere. Yep.
Yeah, like the actual premiere. That's incredibly special, and that's going to really heighten your appreciation of it. Am I correct in that?
Yes, absolutely it did.
Yeah, and so as I'm watching these, it's more like, "Oh my God, I cannot believe we're actually getting an adaptation of it." And that made me overlook a lot of things that I would be critical of. And I enjoyed the slapstick and the lightheartedness of Dandelion, because a lot of people always try to argue with me that, oh no, Dandelion is this, he's deeper, he's deeper. I'm like, you've read one short story where Dandelion had some feelings for Little Eye, and the ending of that story, and you make Dandelion this deep character. I was like, Dandelion is not. He is problematic. Like, he's very problematic. But I'm like, okay, we don't need to get into that. But I like that he was slapstick. I like that when he's introduced, one of his lyrics in his song was like, have an abortion. And they start booing and throwing stuff at him.
I know.
I was dying at that. So I like that. Yeah. I like Geralt punching him when they were going off to meet them. I like that Philivandrel showed them mercy, and it was like, okay, look, these elves, you know, they can kind of listen to reason. Geralt reasoned with them and saying, like, look, you can kill us, but don't think you're any better than the other people killing the elves for doing the same thing. And to hit on the gray aspects, as they're going back, it's where Yaskir starts singing the song, and he talks about how they like fought their way out. Geralt's like, no, that's not what happened. And Yaskir's like, well, it doesn't make a good story for what actually happened. So I'm gonna make a good story, and then we have to sit there and be aware of, well, now people are gonna believe that's what happened because Dandelion's a bard, and in this world, a bard, a poet, operate as like chroniclers, and he's saying, no, I was there, this is what happened, and people are going to take that as fact. And then Geralt has to live with, no, that isn't what happened. And it actually comes back later on in one of the other episodes where he deals with people saying, oh, are you gonna do that? And he's like, nope, that's not how it happened. And they're like, oh, well, that's disappointing. So yeah, I like that it was very much, it hit on that gray aspect of the world very well, of Geralt especially having this moral quandaries.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I'm the same. I did like it when I first watched it. And my first viewing experience of this episode, I was so happy to actually see like the elves introduced. I think that was just took over all of my excitement. Going back and like watching it a few more times, I do realize I'm like, oh yeah, maybe they could have added a little bit more depth to the story. But I think overall it definitely captured the essence of the story. So that is what made me, you know, the most happy. As long as they got that, I was happy. And, the dialogue between Geralt and Yaskir in the show, I thought was just as strong as it was in the book and the story in particular. So I liked it.
It's also where Toss a Coin to Your Witcher came in. So
yes, it's literally that this story is that song, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Like he even says it in the lyrics, like at the edge of the world. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. So it makes me very happy.
Yeah. And I know that that's another thing where you can talk about something getting overplayed, but I tell you what, I still think that song
slaps.
It does. And I heard it again. It just like randomly came up on stream the other night. And I'm like, damn, this has not really gotten old. This song is great. Yeah,
I agree. Actually, I did play it a lot when it first came out, and then I stopped for a while. And now hearing it every once in a while again, I'm like, yeah, this is a good song. It's not old yet. I still love it.
No, it's not. And that was the episode also where it's the Yennefer and the eels thing, right?
Right. I was trying to think about it because I haven't gone back and watched it in a while. I'm like, what was the other story going on in this episode? But it was the Yennefer, her at Aretusa stuff.
What do you think about that introduction into the series, that magic is essentially, I'm not going to call it a finite source, but there's actually a source that they use, like sacrifice. What do you think about that?
I am also like mixed opinion on that. I think for a show to kind of just like wrap it all up on a neat bow and like introduce magic to this world, I think it works. But it's true. I know a lot of Witcher fans were really angry about this, that they, you know, that this is not how magic was ever demonstrated to work in this universe.
No.
And then they just kind of added that in. And and a lot of people were mad about it. So I do kind of agree that it was, I don't know, it's not my favorite thing that they added into the show. But I also understand, for being a show, they maybe wanted to try to find a unique way to explain it, and that's why they added that in there. But I don't know.
I think it was their way of, how can we get Yennefer to be almost resentful of Arethusa and like to hold a grudge, if you will, against Arethusa? Because I remember when it happened, because like I said before, I watched this with Lindsay, who kept asking questions, and I'm sitting there going, I don't have a clue. I don't know what the hell's going on here. Like, I had to not only rewatch it, I had to actually look up what exactly, like, the eels and what it came from. And then I finally was like, oh, that's where they get the source from? And they talked about that earlier. But the thing about it is, what I gather from there is, you have to have, like, a sacrifice in a way to power mm-hmm. magic. So does that mean every time they use magic, something is sacrificed or they lose something?
It seems to be that way, because every time a sorceress casts a spell, they seem to have something. Like, even in the later episodes, like when the big battle of Sodden Hill, I think one of the sorceresses died or something. Like, she just, like, because of, she was trying to cast such a huge spell, and it's like, I guess that seems to be how it is. I guess it adds, like, a level of complexity for magic in the world, but that's just not something that's existed in the rest of the Witcher universe. So I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know. You're right. I think it does makes Yennefer have some sort of reason to resent everything that she's been raised on in at Arethusa. And I think they just really wanted to give Yennefer's backstory some sort of really interesting depth, and that's what they decided on, is this whole magic story. So I don't know. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and it's too bad, I think, also because of all the things that they did well, Yennefer's backstory, I thought, was about the best thing they did in the entire season.
Yeah. Yes, Yennefer's backstory was really good. I love the way they built her character. Because it was one of the things I was looking forward to when I was starting to get, before the show even released, and we knew that the show was going to take a deep dive at Yennefer's backstory, because we don't get any of that in the books. We meet Yennefer as she is, as a sorceress with her own, you know, goals and ambitions and her reasons for doing things, but we don't ever understand who she is. We never get that, or how she came to be. So the fact that the show was going to take their liberties and create that story, I was really excited about. And I think that they did a good job with it. They really made a compelling character of Yennefer. And some people would disagree with that. They don't, you know, love the way she was portrayed in the show. But I personally did like it.
What were some things that you heard people say that they didn't like the way it was portrayed, or the way she was portrayed?
I don't know. I think that I'm trying to remember some of the criticisms I've seen of Yennefer. I think a lot of people just thought that, I don't know, that she didn't have the same amount of confidence levels that Yennefer in the books has. I think that she did, personally. I think she still has that confidence and even arrogance about her.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. they portrayed that very well.
yeah. But I think people think that Yennefer is a strong character regardless, and it doesn't need I also think people played a little too hard on the Yennefer wanting kids thing that I don't think is really touched on as much in the books. Like, I think she develops a relationship with Ciri, a daughter-like relationship with Ciri, as the book progresses. But it's never like so like hard thrown at you that Yennefer wants a child the way it is in the show. So I think that's another thing a lot of people were kind of critical about.
Do you think, see, now all these questions are going to come about, and because you know what you're talking about and you've read it, I'm definitely going to ask you. A big thing in the books are that while Geralt and Yen are off and on, he gets with a lot of other women and sorceresses. Mm-hmm. And while we don't know exactly what is confirmed as far as episode-wise, we can tell by the casting and we can deduce or infer what it's going to be. But like Istrid, or the actor who plays Istrid, has been confirmed for the second season. And so if he's coming back and if they do a Shard of Ice, do you think that will operate the same way? Or do you think they'll be together? I'm kind of all over the place here because I'm just wondering, right, how much are they going to be together? And are they really going to do like what happened in the Shard of Ice and them essentially like break up?
Yeah. You know, that's another, A Shard of Ice is another interesting short story to me that I would love to do an episode on that one, because that one is, I have a lot of confused feelings about that story, because it's kind of very, it's thrown out there and it seems very confusing to the reader. Like, you know, Yennefer and Geralt start this relationship, but then they go back and then Yennefer, you know, gets with Istrid, and as a reader it's very confusing, like, why would Yennefer do this? But I think because the show has really introduced Istrid as a character and developed him a lot more than the short stories ever did, I think it may have a different dynamic if that does come up in like season two, for example. Because you may, as a viewer, you'll be like, okay, well, we know that Istrid and Yennefer had a past, a steamy past. We've seen it like with our own eyes. And so I think that it's, I think it will kind of play differently in the show if that's ever brought up, as opposed to the way it was in the short story, where it's kind of just like, you see Yennefer like with Geralt, but then she's with Istrid, and it's very confusing as a reader. You're like, why is she doing this? So,
yeah, and it's where, because I've even, a lot of people, there's a sizable like population of like the Witcher fan base that just, that cannot stand Yen for numerous reasons. And like, that's almost exhibit A. They'll point to that and be like, oh, she cheated on Geralt. And I've actually had like the biggest Yen stans be like, no, she cheated. Because at first I was like, well, no, they really weren't together. But then other people have been like, no, they were definitely together and she definitely cheated. I'm like, well, that complicates things quite a bit. Right. I love, that might be my favorite short story, because I love mopey, sulky Geralt. Like, because so many people, again, are just like, oh, Geralt is this lone wolf badass and he's going to kill this. And I'm like, man, he's a whopey, whiny baby.
Yep.
And he's so whiny and mopey. And Yen calls him out. And even though Geralt knows this, and now we're talking about this episode. A little quick, yeah. And even though she knows it, she calls him out and she tells him, do this. Like, you need to do this. This is what I need. He knows what he needs to do, but he can't do it. And she literally says, you cannot give me what I need. And he doesn't even try to do it. And then he just goes to do his toxic masculinity thing of fighting Istrid. Yep. And then the notice comes, then he's like, well, you know what? I'm out. And he walks away as Istrid, you know, curses him like, come back and fight, you know, stand with honor. And he's like, no, I'm just going to walk away. And I just love that. I've never seen that in another story. I've never heard of it in anything else, the way that story played out. It was very unique. It was sad, but not fully depressing. And what you want to happen doesn't happen. And you look at your protagonist, your hero, and you just want to shake him and be like, what are you doing? Do what you need to do. But he just can't do it.
Yep. I 100% agree with you. I think that story, you're right. People look at that story and they look at it as the Yennefer is a bad person story. But really, that story is that takes away from really what the story is about. And it's about Geralt and how he reacts to the situation. And it adds the level of, yes, he's not just this guy who is emotionless and here to fight monsters and make money. There's more to him than that. And you see that when he's with Yennefer. Like, there's just a whole different side of it. And he was about to fight Istrid, despite it just being, again, yeah, toxic, and these two dudes just fighting over a woman. Like, it turned out to be something different, and Geralt did walk away. And so it is a very interesting story, and I genuinely hope that we have more of that in season two. I want to see that dynamic of Geralt, Istrid, and Yennefer, and see where the show takes that. So I hope we see it.
Well, what was great about it was you have these two guys, I'm going to fight you over this woman. And the woman's like, no, both of you fuck off. Like, yep. I'm not choosing any of you. Like, you can both go to hell. I'm out.
She stood above that. And yeah. she wasn't having it. Like, she's not your damsel who'll be like, oh, these two men are fighting over me. No, she was just like, this is absolutely ridiculous, and called them both out. And yeah, I do like that about Yennefer a lot.
Oh no, I absolutely love that. All right, yeah. Well, there's our quick short advice.
Short advice, yeah. We get two for one in this episode.
There's the bonus, yeah. All right, well, Tracy, thank you very much for joining me today. This was a lot of fun.
I agree. This was so much fun. I always enjoy talking about this. So yeah, thank you for having me.
No, it was a blast. All right, and everybody out there, all of her info is below. Make sure to check her out on everything. You still do your D&D Sunday nights, right?
We actually just finished this past week.
Okay.
But there'll probably be more to come in the future. So I am always playing D&D and tabletop stuff everywhere. So there will be more to come this year in 2021.
Right on. All right. Well, again, everybody check out everything she's a part of on there, Twitter, Twitch, all of that fun stuff. Await future announcements, future guests, future stories, as we will roll on with The Witcher 2.0. So until then, I will see y'all next time.